good evening, CJM listeners. We're interrupting tonight's regularly scheduled programs of Urban Flow and Rose City Politics for a special CJM presentation of the Citizens for Accountable Mega Hospital Planning Processes event, bringing former Toronto Mayor John Sewell into Vanier Hall at the University of Windsor. I will be introducing John in a matter of moments, so please tune in and stick with us for the next while. Hello, everyone. How's everybody doing tonight? Doing good? Fantastic. Well, my name's Chris Holt. If you don't know me, I'm a city councillor in Ward 4, and I'm very pleased to see so many bright and shining faces here in the audience tonight. If I could ask you a favor, as you know, at the beginning of all these things, it's about those electronic devices in your pocket. Tweet heavily, Facebook to your friends and neighbors, and let them know that this event tonight is being live fed from CJAM. So they can actually, if they couldn't make it here tonight, they can tune in on 99.1 FM and actually listen to the broadcast live from home. But I've got the great pleasure tonight to introduce, for a lot of the people, I see a lot of gray hairs in the audience, and I've got some too, so I can say that, you might know this name, John Sewell, former mayor of Toronto in the 50s or in the 60s and 70s. He's not quite that old. John's not that old. But I'm going to sort of go into a prepared introduction for John, and hope you'll bear with me on that. So those who lived in Toronto in the 70s and 80s, and even those who are following politics in the late 60s, will remember the long-haired, jeans-wearing, bike-riding councillor who served as mayor from 78 to 80. John Sewell was the face of the reform movement in Toronto. During his term as mayor, he introduced a monthly transit pass and froze fares. He fought for police accountability and gay rights at a time when these topics were taboo. He also is the author of several books, with his latest being How We Changed Toronto, which is published this year. In his book, he described a municipal environment in Toronto that was friendly to developers who wanted to replace the core's older housing stock and threaten the identity of neighborhoods with the construction of new high-rises and highway systems. By working closely with a committed group of residents, John and his reform colleagues on council were able to keep council responsive to the needs of the people that they were elected to serve. In his book, he describes the importance of decision-making that closely involves all the residents. With all the social media we have today, this has become much easier. But back in 1970, think about it, it was a completely different world. So it's my pleasure to introduce you tonight to Mr. John Sewell. John.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm really glad to be here. And I heard that remark about gray hairs. I don't have a lot of gray hair. I don't have a lot of hair, which is the problem. But it reminds me of the great line by George Burns. Yeah, I'm happy to be here this evening, but at my age, I'm happy to be anywhere this evening. When I agreed to speak here in Windsor, I thought there was just one question which needed to be answered in the basis of my talk. Where would a new hospital be built? And where should it be built? But I've learned the issue is much bigger than that. And let me begin by how I arrived here. There's a tinny noise to this, is there?
Yes.
Okay, what do we do about that? I mean, I have a terrific voice. I just don't want the tinny stuff. How's that? Is that better? There's still a bit of it, right? Okay. Are we okay there? Okay, there we go. Thank you. So let me tell you how I arrived here. I was interviewed on a CBC program called Fresh Air. And I talked about the fact that in Collingwood, where my wife and I have a weekend place, there's a lot of talk about how they're moving the hospital from downtown. Now we've got an echo. You know, I could probably just talk, right? I can talk loud enough.
It's live streaming, so you need the mics extra loud.
Okay, Sorry. Let's might as well get it right. Right. Okay. We all. Well, we still got an echo here. Worse than ever. Is it these? Are these too close together or something? Okay. Anyway, so there I was on Fresh Air talking about how in Collingwood they're trying to move the hospital from the downtown to the edge of town. And I said what a crazy idea it was and how a number of people I talked to in Collingwood were very much opposed to it. Well, immediately I get a call from people here in Windsor saying, hey, they're doing the very same thing here in Windsor. And then a day later I get a call from people up in Huntsville and Bracebridge and saying, they're trying to do that to us too. And quite quickly, I realized that, in fact, there's a pattern here of putting new hospitals on the edge of the community. So I thought, what's going on? And I started with the most basic consideration. A hospital should be located so it's easy to access by patients, by staff, and by emergency vehicles. Now, any location is good for an ambulance. They just clear the traffic out of the way, and they're there very quickly. So you don't have to worry about where it is from an emergency vehicle point. But patients and staff are a different matter. And in fact, patients often use public transit, so do staff. And the best transit routes are usually in the center of the community. And for most people, getting to the center of the community is clearly the shortest trip. Taxis are also available in the center, and not a long ride for most people. So in fact, from those points of view, a central location always makes more sense. Putting a hospital on the edge of the community is more difficult and more costly for staff and patients. Now obviously, if you put it out there, there are some people in the county for which it's better. But if you leave it downtown, at least the people in the county aren't disadvantaged. Whereas if you move it out there, all the people in the city are disadvantaged. So putting the hospital on the edge of a community is not a very smart decision. A central location serves the most patients and the most staff. And if the objective is to provide accessible, patient-centered care, central locations are always the best. And I wondered, why doesn't that settle the matter? Isn't that sort of the end of it right there? Was there, I saw it, some provincial policy which said that big new infrastructure should not be located centrally? So I turned to provincial planning policy, embodied in what's called the provincial planning statement. I'm familiar with that because when I headed the Commission, the Royal Commission on Planning and Development in Ontario in 1991 and 1993, actually wrote most of that planning policy. So I know about it, and I looked at it. And I won't go through the words are really boring, they're governmentese. But in fact, it's pretty clear what that policy says. It says you should try and ensure that you optimize the use of land, that you intensify, that you redevelop, and that you do things efficiently. Now, I think the planning policy statement is pretty wishy-washy at the end of the day. I wish it was a lot stronger in the way that we'd actually recommended it in 1993. But its direction is very clear. It favors mixed-use development, efficient development, which minimizes the use of land, and new infrastructure. It favors intensification. In short, the statement says that no one should try to suburbanize a settlement area. Putting a new hospital on the edge of the community is contrary to the provincial planning statements. And I think a council decision to redesignate land at the edge of the community would be challenged as contrary to provincial planning policy. But then I thought, why would agents of the provincial government, Ministry of Health as an example, or people that they appoint to look at the question, suggest that a central location was wrong? as they appear to be doing here in Collingwood and Bracebridge and Huntsville. The other point that was clear to me is that apart from policy, a hospital should be located where it can strengthen the sense of community. And to do that, and strengthening community is often called city building, one needs increased economic activity and the possibility of economic growth. It's been shown time and again that ideas about new economic activity emerge almost as unexpectedly as possible when people get together and share ideas. It's the getting together and the sharing ideas, then boom, new ideas seem to pop up. And this happens when people run into each other by chance and meet new people or through friends. And there must be many opportunities for these interactions for new ventures to emerge. Chance meetings on the street, in bars and restaurants, the theater, places of worship. Obviously, the denser and more mixed use the community is, the more opportunities for growth occur. The less dense and more separated the uses, the less likely you'll have good economic activity. And there was a very interesting story about this in the Globe and Mail last week. Let me just read you three paragraphs. It says, Ori Rothstein, surgeon in chief at Toronto St. Michael's Hospital, didn't know Ryerson University's Dean of Engineering when he took the seat beside him at an award announcement 5 years ago. Before the event ended, the pair had struck an alliance, figuring there must be ways that the school and the hospital, located on each other's doorsteps, could work together. The result of that chance meeting are on display this week with the opening Tuesday of shared research facilities and a new business incubator, both designed to help translate science into improvements in care and hasten their use at the bedside. I said, we are neighbors and we have not done much together, remembers Ryerson's Mohammed Lakemi, now the school's interim president. Quote, when you bring people with different perspectives together, that's when you get innovation. So there's a terrific story of how it actually happens. People running into each other and saying, how come we aren't working together? We should be. And they do, and you get something new. Good innovation. And just imagine that. Because the hospital was in the middle of different kinds of businesses and institutions, good things began to happen. And that's what city building is all about. It's why intensification is so important. It's why it's a step backward for any new institution to move from the center to the edge. In the suburbs, the institution would harm itself by limiting the opportunities for change and would not help the community become stronger. Let's face it, if you were to take a vacation to some other urban area of the world, you would almost never decide that what you wanted to see was a suburb. You would want to go to the heart of the city. That's where things happen. In fact, you could never find a suburb that was not on the edge of a city. You could find a city that wasn't surrounded by a suburb. At least you could until 3 decades ago, but it's never the other way around. And it's true. If you think of going to that big place called Toronto, you don't stay in Mississauga. You go downtown. That's where the action is. City building intensifies and diversifies. Projects in the suburbs don't do this, and enterprises and institutions which are moved to the suburbs are more correctly referred to as city wrecking projects. We all know this from the example of retail. Building big box retail on the edge of town has led to the death of many strip retail shops in the downtowns of Ontario. Without a vibrant retail downtown, people have little reason to go there. After all, your chances of meeting someone else there by chance is small. And then they lead to the death of the downtown itself. Many cities have encouraged big box retail in the suburbs, but they have then reverted to sponsoring farmers markets downtown. because they know that people actually go to farmers markets. That's where it's fun. You can meet all sorts of people. You go there. I think it's absolutely terrific that the university has decided to move 2 and maybe 3 faculties into the central area of Windsor. That's terrific. That's exactly what Windsor needs. It's exactly the right decision. Thank goodness the university is moving in exactly the right way. I want to make one other point, which is that low-density suburban development is very costly to a municipality, and I'll give you a simple example. Every house requires a sewage connection, but the cost of that connection for 150 feet joining together 3 houses on 50-foot lots is an awful lot more expensive than the cost of joining 3 houses together on 20-foot lots. That kind of low-density sprawl has very heavy costs. I've written a whole book on this called The Shape of the Suburbs, where I show that suburban development, the sprawl around the GTA, would never have happened if the provincial government didn't pour in billions and billions of dollars in roads and sewage and water connections. So, I might say that just the example of that we've heard for the hospital location on the edge of town, according to staff, is that the extra cost needed for the new infrastructure is at least $250 million paid for by the municipality. We're talking serious money. Anyway, that's the theory of how urban areas work, and most good planners know that. And surely those planning new hospitals know that. So there's got to be something else at play. And so I began to look at communities where new hospitals had recently been built. Peterborough, the edge of the city. Barrie, very edge of the city. North Bay, just outside the city. There was a clear pattern that didn't make sense to anyone who looked at location in terms of accessibility and patient-centered care, or in terms of city building. There had to be other factors at play. Well, I began to look at what the Ministry of Health does. And the process for new hospitals is for the Ministry of Health to work with local hospital authorities, include the local health integration network, around needs and location. The needs determines what will be built, such as this is going to be a cancer specializing hospital, or this one will specialize in acute care, or whatever it happens to be. And the location study will determine location. And this, I learned, was one of the tipping points. The criteria for the location of the site to be chosen basically rules out anything but a greenfield site on the edge of the city. One of the locational criteria is this, quote, the site should be large enough to accommodate the proposed uses, as well as future building, structures, parking, landscape, garden areas, etc., including allied services and potential research uses. Large enough. So how large is large enough? Well, very, very, very large, as it turns out. It goes on. These criteria, this is a location criteria. The parcel size must plan for potential physical and site needs of the facility over a 5, 10, 20, 50, and 100-year time frame that ensures the best use of significant and long-term government commitment. It should provide flexibility to accommodate major changes in healthcare delivery and for program requirements. So tell me this. How do you plan for a 50 or 100-year time frame in a hospital? We know that health care is advancing very, very quickly. 100 years, 50 years? Could anyone have guessed 20 years ago that one of the things that hospitals really need is a place for outpatient daily chemotherapy? That's a big thing in hospitals now. 20 years ago, nobody even knew about it. But yet they're saying we got a plan for 100 years? Whew. You think, how about if we plan for today and what we can actually see in the horizon? And how about if we made space that was flexible enough that when the changes come, we could actually use it well? You know, what kind of space are we going to need for genetic treatment and genetic drugs? We don't actually know at this point, too early on. 50 years ago, we were worried about polio. Well, no, not today. We've managed to deal with that one. We used to think that having two patients in a room was luxurious and that wards with four and six people were standard. Well, today we know better probably just to have one person in a room in terms of changing viruses and so forth. So trying to plan for 50 or 100 years and putting aside enough land to ensure we can meet whatever needs arise long after most of us are dead and buried, that's a mug's game. It's wasteful and it's useless. And what is being said is that the site must give maximum flexibility with no constraints. Well, as we know, cities are full of constraints. That's actually how we usually get the most interesting architecture. Things are tight and close and relating to each other very carefully. That's how we build cities and why they're so interesting. Here's another criteria. Quote, the parcel shape should allow for a development pad that would accommodate a hospital. The pad should generally be rectangular in size to allow maximum ground floor coverage. The shape and geometry should be such as to accommodate the hospital itself, ancillary buildings, along with parking. And then it goes on. The site should have trails and walkways within the site that connect to the bigger municipal system. Trails and walkways. You don't get many of those in cities, do you? You get sidewalks. You get corner stores. You get medical offices. No, they don't talk about any of that. They want trails and walkways. The interesting thing about the criteria is they make no mention of existing hospital structures, about how they could be used and transformed and renovated and rehabilitated. More importantly, the criteria make no mention of the provincial planning statements, those things that I referred to earlier, that are supposed to govern all decisions, that says that any council's decision must be consistent with these planning policies. Doesn't even mention those. And you think, why would the provincial government have a procedure which recommends that new hospitals are located in places that are not consistent with good planning or with accessible patient-centered care? I think, and I tried to answer that question, I think it has to do with the way that hospitals are actually built. Because after there's a decision made by the Ministry of Health and local health authorities about the location and the services that new hospitals will provide, the matter is then turned over to a different ministry, Infrastructure Ontario, to build. So Infrastructure Ontario builds hospitals and infrastructure using what they call the public-private partnership model. The Ministry of Health or another ministry tells Infrastructure Ontario what must be built, then asks Infrastructure Ontario to get bids from private companies, and then it signs agreements with those private companies which guarantee the price at which the facility will be designed and built and financed and in many cases run for a 20 or 30 year period. So in other words, it's a way of the government actually getting a private company to do the whole thing. And the reason why this was done was because, first of all, they thought, well, you know, governments are wasteful. Private companies are not wasteful. We know that. We know that Rogers and CTV and all those big companies, they aren't wasteful at all. But governments are wasteful. Private companies can do things more efficiently. I think we all agree that that's a bit of a problem. It's a questionable assumption. But for some, it seems to be a matter of deep belief or even faith. And the private partnership model is based on that. But the other reason for going with the private partnership model is that the government does not have to put out any big outlay of money to build the infrastructure. It doesn't put up any money out front. It's like buying a car where they give you, they say, well, you're buying the car, terrific. Let us give you $5,000. Oh, look at that. I bought a car. They gave me $5,000. And then, of course, you're going to pay it back over the next 8 years. And boy, do they get you. It's the same thing with the hospitals. The government doesn't have to put up any money up front, but it does have to put up money in the long term for 25 or 30 years. You probably don't worry about it as much because it's not $2 billion up front. Instead, it's probably like $200 million for a long, long period of time, paying it every year. So I think it's this public-private partnership process which drives the government to insist on large sites which are not constrained by irregular property lines or existing buildings. That triple P process wants a clean site because that makes the building much simpler for the very, very large companies that build those hospitals. And I think this is unspoken, but I believe it lies behind the crazy criteria which I've referred to, which is so much against city building. I might point out that the public-private partnership model does not save us, the public, or the government, money. There's been some interesting studies done on it, one by a professor at the University of Toronto, another by the Auditor General of Ontario. Both conclude that it costs 18% more to build on the public-private partnership model than if the government just did it itself. That's a lot of money, 18%. If you're building a $2 billion hospital, the extra cost of going the triple P route is, I don't know, $300 million. Well, I think we could all use a bit of that $300 million. The cost the public, the private companies say is because we're assuming the risk. Well, what's the risk of building a hospital? I don't think there is very much risk. And so I question whether, in fact, that's a wise use of the public money. But what it means is that the Ministry of Health doesn't really worry about the money. It worries about location and function. It says to an infrastructure engineer, you worry about money and get the cheapest price you can. And of course, they put it out for bids, and they do. They get it, instead of getting a bid that would be $2.4 billion, they got one for $2 billion. See, they said, we did it. We got a good bid. But in fact, at the bottom line, who's looking at the bottom line? I think what we're dealing with here are two crazy ideas. One is the idea of starting over. Forget about the downtown and start over in a new location in the suburbs. Forget about existing hospitals or the existing center of the city. Tear down those existing hospitals and start over again. That's a crazy idea. It's no different than the ideas of urban renewal in the 1960s. That's when I got involved in politics in the Trafan Court area in downtown Toronto, where the city said, we're going to tear down this neighborhood and we're going to start over again. And people obviously in that neighborhood said, wait a minute, that's a crazy idea. What we got to do is we got to fix our neighborhood. There's some parts that are damaged and we'll have to replace them. But most of this neighborhood just needs a bit of fixing. And we had a big fight in Toronto, but in fact, finally, we convinced City Council, we actually changed City Council to do it, to say, that's what we have to do. We have to protect neighborhoods. We have to say, we aren't tearing neighborhoods down and starting over. We're going to save neighborhoods, and we're going to fix them. And so demolition and replacement is now a discredited idea in terms of neighborhood planning. Unfortunately, it seems to be a central idea when it comes to the Ministry of Health and what they think about new hospitals. They say, let's start over. Forget about the past, let's start over. What the ministry should be doing is saying, how can we improve and add to existing hospitals and take care of today's needs while building space that is flexible enough to respond well to future needs? That's not what it says. It says we can start over and everything will be right. There won't be any problems. Everything will be efficient in the future. It'll all work well. But as we know, those who take that approach in the world in that blind fashion usually get a lot of things wrong. So starting over is one problem. The second problem is that those running the process seem to be nice people. I've talked to some of them. But in fact, they are megalomaniacs. Now, hold on. Megalomaniac is a big word. And when I thought of it one night, I was actually sleeping and I woke up and I thought, I know the word, it's megalomaniac. I looked it up. It means a mental order characterized by delusions of grandeur, wealth, and power. Wow, I thought, that fits. I mean, I thought, what have we got? A hospital plan couched in grandeur, wealth, and power. How I wish it was couched in accessible, patient-centered care and city building instead. There are other definitions of megalomaniac, but they actually fit the situation pretty well, too. One of them is, quote, a passion for or for doing big things, or a tendency to exaggerate. And I think that's what we have here. It's craziness. Those who support this approach, in my opinion, should be ashamed of themselves. Yes, I know this approach to new hospitals is common wisdom, as I've mentioned in these other communities as well, and many think it cannot be attacked, just as in the past no one was able to say that the king had no clothes. The thought that we build the right facility, then all the human problems we solved, of course, is a delusion. Every cent built on building with concrete and mortar is money that we cannot spend on people who provide the accessible patient-centered care that we all want. It's money that will be lost to good health care. So where does the local council fit in regard to these decisions? Well, in Bracebridge and Huntsville, two relatively small communities, you probably know up there in the Canadian Shield, the two councils are both strongly opposed to what the ministry and the hospital board are trying to do. They don't like the idea that the small facilities that they have in both their towns will be shut down. And in fact, a new hospital will be built in a pristine part of the Canadian Shield, equal distance between the two communities, literally in the middle of nowhere. It looks very likely that they will challenge the ministry in court on the basis of provincial planning policy. They'll just say, sorry, you got policy, you can't do it. And these two communities took the unheard of step on Monday evening of this week, just two nights ago, of holding a joint meeting of the two town councils, they'd never done it before, to confront the ministry and seek a more reasonable course of action. So they're being really tough, really, really good. Now, of course, here in Windsor, you have not yet been so fortunate, and yet, I think, is the key word. The mayor and most of council have generally been in support of hollowing out the city center and seeing a large new hospital built on the distant horizon. Do they know something we don't know? They do not. But they've been mesmerized by the big bucks floating in the air. This kind of dumb approach happens much too often at the municipal level, most usually with professional sports teams who demand that the local government build them a new arena and threatening to go elsewhere if they do not give them their wish. We hear that story all the time. Give us the arena, we're going to go somewhere else. And the point is, if there is a competition with Bracebridge and Huntsville, as some people have said, Windsor is in competition with other places for money. Well, if there is a competition with Bracebridge and Huntsville, I want to tell you that those two communities hope that Windsor will win. and that's a pity. But there is no competition. That's not true. There is no competition. There's always pressure to be silent in the face of big money. And I want to say that Councillor Chris Holt, wherever he got to, should be praised. I know he didn't want me to say this, but he should be praised for not being cowed by the big money. He is acting with the kind of gumption we expect from everyone we elect. But the aura of the megalomaniac is powerful. No wonder the local integrated health network refuses to hold a meeting in Windsor to talk about its support of the new hospital in the suburbs. No wonder that the mayor and most of the council won't engage in this issue. No wonder the senior policy advisor to the Ministry of Health, after greeting me so warmly on the telephone 2 or 3 weeks ago, has since refused to send me the ministerial guidelines for new hospitals and has refused to respond to any of my frequent calls and emails. Megalomaniacs don't have an answer for reasoned arguments. But as citizens, you are not alone in challenging this approach by the Ministry of Health and Infrastructure and the local integrated health network. They are being challenged by other people in other locations. As I've mentioned, they're about to be challenged in Collingwood, I'm happy to say. I talked last night to the deputy mayor, and he said, I'm against them moving the hospital to the suburbs. And he's ready to engage and make it a big fight there. So you have allies that you should reach out to. I believe this is the beginning of the struggle to get the Ministry of Health to start spending our money more wisely. I suspect there are many here in the health care field here in Windsor who also wish to express their opposition to what is proposed, but have yet been willing to find the confidence to do so. Perhaps what we need is a good study which shows that for substantially less money, existing hospitals can be renovated and added to, and new facilities built centrally, and that more funds can be devoted to the human side of healthcare rather than bricks and mortar. Surely these are questions the Ministry of Health should be addressing, and maybe the university can help on this now that it's made the wise decision to say we got to be more in the central area. Maybe there's good resources there you can use that will help make a more reasonable decision. What physical resources do we want and what human resources do we need to improve healthcare here? That's the real question. What can be done to improve healthcare in Windsor for a modest amount of money? That's a good question. So let me return to the first question. Where should a new hospital be built? Obviously, in the central city if you're going to build one, since that provides accessible, patient-centered care, and it builds and strengthens the city. It is right to hammer away with this question, since it is the one that megalomaniacs have such trouble responding to. I have no doubt that the struggles going on here and in other communities are critical to restoring reason and financial responsibility to healthcare decisions making in Ontario. Keep up the struggle. Many in the province rely on your resilience. Thank you for being so strong and so determined in what might be a bit longer fight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And John, I'm not used to this just yet. I was just elected a year ago, so I'm not really used to being all centered out and just being a hero and stuff like that. But thank you. I just want to share one thing that I'm afraid of. I joined up with a couple like-minded individuals over 2 years ago, way long before I got elected, and we formed the Citizens for Accountable Mega Hospital Planning Process. And what prompted that was the ministry's call for 50 to 60 acres of greenfield site. And that raised alarm bells with a lot of people, a lot of people. We're not just a small group. We're, I believe, and I think the numbers here are showing that there's a lot more people concerned about this than people are letting on. But I'm afraid of the core of our city being emptied out. I'm afraid of vital services being pulled away from the people who need them the most and sent off to a soybean field out by the airport. I'm afraid of losing property tax dollars to neighboring Tecumseh. Not that Tecumseh is a bad town, you know, it's a lovely town. But I want to keep our property tax dollars here in the city where they actually do some good and pay for the roads and pay for the $250 million that it's going to take to service this new field. I've been called an armchair urban planner by fellow members of council in a derogatory term, but I think that I think we have the right argument going forward. So I'm thrilled to see everybody here, sort of giving John a listen, some fantastic information there. That's all news to me about what's going on with the Embrace Bridge in Huntsville, and I'm so glad that we're not the only ones. And I want to thank you for that. But for now, what we'll do is we will take let's say 20 minutes of questions for John. What we're going to do is, because we're broadcasting live on CJAM, if you could just let the questions fly at me, I'll repeat them into the microphone for John so that the listeners can hear, and we'll go from there. Mr. Hanna.
Hello, John.
How are you?
So for anybody who couldn't hear, basically the question is the role that Kathleen Wynne can play in the proceedings and what we're going through right now.
Yeah. I've known Kathleen Wynne for 22, 23 years, and she and I together were sort of the leaders of the fight against the megacity in Toronto. They were the days, I'll tell you. We were having meetings every Monday night. We're getting 2,000 people out every Monday night. The only place you can have meetings of that size are in churches. So we had it in St. James Cathedral and Metropolitan United Church. And Kathleen chaired them. So I know her quite well. And yes, I remain in touch with her. And certainly I will talk to her about this issue. As premier, often you can't intervene with particular ministries. You can say, watch out. But I think the main pressure is going to come from you and Huntsville and Bracebridge and Collingwood, and I mean, I think it would be absolutely staggering to get a meeting in Toronto with the Ministry of Health, with Aris Hoskins as an example, and saying, you've got to change what you're doing. This is wrong. But I think that in fact, the other thing that is in your favor is that we don't have all the money that we need in Ontario. We're running an annual deficit. And so being a bit more careful with money makes a lot of sense. So I think there's a lot of arguments that you can make with the provincial government that in fact they will find interesting.
Doug?
We spend like $200 million for all the facilities.
CJAM 99.1 FM, your only true sound alternative in Windsor, Detroit. CJAM broadcast from the University of Windsor locally at 99.1 FM and to the world at www.cjm.ca.
They're just going to tear it down and throw it in the garbage. All that money that we've already spent improving the hospitals we already have, and they're just going to throw it in the garbage.
And past hospital levies as well, you know, the things that we've spent ourselves. So,
my understanding is that the Met was $100 million in 2005, 10 years ago. Wow. Well, yeah. But that's... You know, that's that whole notion, oh, we got to start over again. Let's forget about the past. Let's start over. No, you don't. We can't afford to do that in life. We've got to say where we are and say, so what are the problems and let's improve them. But starting over, no, bad idea.
When you first started, you mentioned something about if the hospital's built in the city, it's not going to put the county residents out. But if the hospital's built in close to the county, it's going to put the city residents out. Right. Can you tell me why?
Sure. So the argument I made, and this was the question, that I said that if you build the facilities in the central area, in fact, nobody's going to lose. Whereas if you build it in the far distant suburbs, the city people are going to lose, and in fact, the county people will gain a wee bit. And what the city people will lose is their transit access and the cost of a taxi, which are the key how most of the people get to hospitals at the moment. So there's a real loss by going to anything but a central location. And that's true generally of most facilities. Most infrastructure, you put it in the central area because it serves most people best there.
Is that because most of the county people already have transportation to get around?
The county people will not be disadvantaged by, in fact, something happening in the central area because that's where it already is happening.
Belongs to more than the city. The city belongs to all of the county, and a strong city helps the county.
Yes, this is the argument about cities and suburbs, that in fact, if the city dies, everybody loses. People living in the suburbs lose as well. But if the city is strong, then the suburbs is going to be a lot stronger. And so it's why we've got to really do everything we can to strengthen the city. I mean, I'm just on that point, and I know it's entirely separate, but I mean, I was delighted to hear about Syrian refugees coming to Windsor. I think this is exactly a step in the right direction. More people, they're bringing extraordinary amounts of talent with them. We're all going to have to learn Arabic. That's a problem. But in fact, as we know, they'll learn English long before any of us. But that kind of a thing begins to strengthen the city. That's what we need.
Okay. In the back there? And then Bucky.
There's so many things wrong with this. It's hard to pick one thing. I'm not trying to. I'll just say one thing. My biggest issue is right now, with all this fear mongering, they're telling us that if we don't shut up, they're going to give the money to somebody else. Is there any truth behind that? And another thing, real quick. One thing you said early on, you said that people in the city won't be disadvantaged by ambulances. I don't know. Ambulances are fast, but they're a lot faster getting somewhere in the city than air going up there.
So the question is related to the fear-mongering that we've been is put up with whether or not there's any truth that we're going to lose the hospital to some other community.
No, I there is no competition that's going on that I'm aware of. I think that's entirely made up. But I know what happens whenever anybody talks about big hunks of money. There's always the fear, we won't get it, somebody else will. It's an unreasonable, unrational thing, but in fact, it's happened. There's no question that if Windsor came forward and said, we've got this terrific plan to improve health facilities, and it's going to cost $250 million, does that mean the Ministry of Health is going to walk away? I don't think so. I think what they'll say is, you know, maybe we've been doing this the wrong way, right? And I mean, let's face it, the last thing we need are bigger hospitals. I think all of us, we don't need bigger hospitals. We need smaller hospitals. We need more people who are treated, you know, well at home.
Yeah, you said most people get to the hospital by taxi or transit. Well, Windsor's a very car-oriented place, and it really is easy to drive anywhere and get free parking. Like, people demand free parking everywhere. So part of this plan is acres and acres of parking. But there's also an issue, too, of hospitals charging so much for parking. People complain about that. But yeah. At least in the center of the city, they understand. Or they assume that money, the parking lot, is going to health care, so they're willing to either take a bus or swallow the cost. Whereas out in the county, either they're going to expect free parking or it's going to be two things. People going to visit the hospital are going to pay for parking, whereas doctors and especially administrators working there are going to have free parking provided for all year long.
Yeah.
Make a comment about that parking situation.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, I'm a guy who rides a bicycle most of the time. So I like to find solutions that don't rely on driving everywhere. Now, that I don't often, when I have to go to a hospital, ride my bike to a hospital. Depends on the condition I have. But there's no question that one of the great problems that people make about hospitals is the amount they charge for parking. And the province has been thinking in of trying to bring some control over that. And I have no question that if they build parking lots out on the way out there on the horizon, they will charge you. I have no question about that at all, because they'll be saying, my goodness, what are we going to do? We don't have any money now because we spent it all on this bricks and mortar and on the paving for the cars. The nice thing about hospitals, healthcare facilities in the central area is, you know, you can park on the street. That's not a bad idea either. And often that's cheap. I should say that I noticed that, in fact, it's easy to drive in Windsor. There's not a lot of traffic, which is sad, right? And I hope that, in fact, there's a turnaround, and so that the streets are really, really busy in the next 10 years, and Windsor regains its health. I hope that happens.
And then in the back.
Yep.
Building this hospital on credit, right? They're getting the $2 billion.
That's correct. That's the way they're done now.
So how do we get that $2 billion? Like, how can you get credit for other healthcare things? Say they spent a $300 million hospital. Now they've actually got to pay for that, or can they get that on credit? Or can they get new diagnostic services on credit? Is there a way that you can actually, you know, because that's why they're building.
What? Right. Yeah. Let's be clear. I didn't talk about this, but in fact, the province says we'll put up 76% of the capital costs, and you have to find 24% of it locally. Usually, that means the council puts in a bunch of money, and then you try and find wealthy people to put in the rest. So there's a major financial hurdle. In that respect, I mean, you know, it's not as though the decisions about building this hospital and committing to it are over. Council's got to make a lot of decisions, including how much money is the city council going to put into the hospital? Well, be an interesting little fight. But the point is that once you've entered into this contract with the private companies, and they are very large companies, I suspect that almost all of the ones who would build a hospital here would be companies located in Toronto, which, in my opinion, is wrong. Sorry. That's the bad way of doing things. They should be companies that are located around here in Windsor. But once you sign the contract, you're committed. You're committed for those 25 or 30 years, and you can't get out of paying that money. And that's the problem. It's much better. I think we all know this from our own lives. That except for something like buying a house that in fact it's much better to actually say, let's put up the cash now. We know what it is. We've paid it out, and we can get on with things. And I think the province would be much better if they looked at hospitals that way.
Rebecca?
Yeah. I have sort of a strategic question. We're at the point now where there are employees on the brink of going to the next phase. I guess my question is, when you managed to reverse the trend in Toronto in the early 70s, are there any comparisons between what you were able to do and what we can do here? Can you give us some advice?
Yeah, so that. Okay. So the question is, are we too far along in the process, or what do we do? And, you know, there's a very famous saying, and you all know who said it, it ain't over till it's over. There are many, many, many decisions to be made before this thing gets even close to finality. And so you have many opportunities to do I can suggest two or three things. One is find your allies. And I've mentioned three other municipalities where I believe you have allies. And I suspect, I haven't had time to look at it, I suspect there's other communities in Ontario as well where they're thinking of doing the same thing, so that there are a lot of allies. So I think that should happen. Citizens reaching out to citizens. And in some cases, you'll also be reaching out to mayors and councillors who are very supportive. And I think one has to go at it every single week, going after the existing councillors and talking to them and running into them if you can and saying, wait a sec, at bars and restaurants and all those things I talked about, and saying, look it, we got to change our mind on this. And you've got to find a way of gracefully getting onto the other side of this issue. And that's going to take some time, but that's the only way to do it. And when we changed the opinions in Toronto, that's what we did. We got really serious and we got really tough. And you're going to have to do that as well. And I think what you'll find, the more it's talked about publicly, I think the more you'll find that people begin to come on side. And some of the people who've not been willing to talk publicly about it will say, wait a second now, I want to join the intelligent side in this conversation. So it's going to take some work on your part, but I believe it's entirely doable, as I believe we're on the cusp of change in the province. It's change for the better. It doesn't just help Windsor, it'll help a lot of other communities as well.
Annika? Oh, I'm sorry.
What can we do to get the possibility to be built in Windsor, or at least improve it, in terms of building it out in the county?
Was the question, how can we get them to rebuild the existing hospitals as opposed to building a new one?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, obviously, that's one issue, whether you want to just fix the existing hospitals rather than build new ones. I think you might look at that, and I suggested that, you know, it might be interesting to look at the economic impacts of having hospitals in the central area. That might be part of that kind of study to show how it's of great significance to the city as a whole. And I think that maybe, you know, you might look to the university and find some people there who would help you with those studies. I think you have some time. This is not something that's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 months. You want to get at it right away. But then you can start looking at that and say, what are the problems? I mean, if we just spend $100 million on the Met, there can't be that many problems, are there? Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. So this gentleman here.
I'm just wondering, we keep hearing that this is the most open, transparent, wholesome process I've ever seen. I'm just wondering if you're in a position to maybe talk about that process and how it might compare to some of the other communities that have gone through
that. Yeah, no, it is amazing what government PR people can say. Right? It always bought open and transparent. It's not. I mean, it's not even reasonable. I mean, to me, the big point that stands out, so where's the local health integration network? Where is, how come it isn't here saying, look it, you've got your facts wrong. Here's how it's like the Holy Roman Empire, as Voltaire said, you know, not holy, not Roman, and not an empire. Well, it's not open. It's not transparent. And whatever the third world was, right? But that's just government speak. This is not a reasonable process. A reasonable process, say, let's sit down and let's do a serious analysis of what the health care needs are here now. Let's not say, okay, we're going to start by building a hospital. Where do we build it? See, I think that's what they've done. So we got to go back to square. So what? How do we ensure that we're getting really good patient-centered care in Windsor, and that we're doing it in a way that builds the city rather than wrecks it? There are the questions to ask.
My question has to do with, you alluded earlier to the
might be able to unlock some of that. I assume that some of the answers are simply that those of us whose livelihoods don't rely on these institutions have to carry that mantle, but I wonder if there is other ways.
Well, you know, professionals are odd people, I've found. I'm trained as a lawyer, so I can say that with some authority. And often they take the position that they shouldn't be speaking out. And I think what we've got to do is we've got to convince, as an example, 10 doctors, not one doctor, but 10 doctors to get together quietly and talk among themselves and say, we think there's got to be a better solution. We're people who are committed to patient-centered, accessible health care. So I think that's the way I'd get those professionals to speak out. I'd get a group of 10 of them. I believe it'll take 4 or 5 meetings of those individuals. It is not going to happen one day. But I think the way I would approach it is I would look around and I say, who are 10 really interesting health professionals in Windsor? Can we get together to talk about this whole issue of a new hospital and what's required? And can we spend 3 or 4 meetings figuring out if there's something we can all agree on? I have a theory about how these processes work, and let me just tell you to legitimize it, because I've done it many, many times, particularly on planning issues. And I say to people, okay, we're going to get a group together, and it's going to be a diverse group of people with different opinions and different interests. And planning issues, I make sure it's going to be a developer there, and there's going to be an environmentalist and a community activist and a city planner and so forth. So a really diverse group. And I always look for people who are leaders in their field. So if I'm going to get a developer, I want to get a developer who says, oh, you got that person? That social worker? Oh. So that, in fact, it's interesting. And then what I do is I say, I'm not going to select anybody who knows that they've got all the answers and everybody else is wrong. As you know, there are a number of people in the world like that. You don't want them at your meeting. They're no fun. And the last thing I demand is you have to come to the first 3 meetings. Absolutely critical. You have to come. Yeah, sorry. If you're saying you can't come to one of the first 3 meetings, then you aren't part of the group. And what I have constantly found at these groups is that the first meeting, you go around the table and you say, what do you think? And, well, I think this. And the end of the meeting, you think, oh, why did I ever get this group together? They've all got such stupid opinions and they're all against each other. Okay, we've agreed we're coming back here in 2 weeks for the second meeting. The second meeting, what happens is everybody says almost the same thing they said at the first meeting, but in fact, they take sentences that other people had said. So it's much softer. And at the end of that second meeting, what happens is people sort of say, you know, I saw you last week at the Ontario Municipal Board. And there's these little chats at the end of the meeting. And then at the third meeting, what happens is somebody says, do you think we can all agree on this? And you think, well, that's an interesting idea. Somebody says, well, if you just change 2 words. Oh, yeah. And at the end of the third meeting, people who never thought they'd agree on anything say, yeah, we could agree on that. And I found it's an extraordinarily creative way of dealing with things. And so if you got 10 health professionals together and said, come on, we're going to spend at least 3 meetings talking about this, you'd come up with stuff that you wouldn't have believed possible, and neither would they. I might say, I've done this a number of times, and people said, well, wait a second now, we want to have a 4th and a 5th and a 6th meeting. I say, come on. You know. Anyway, so that's what I would suggest in terms of getting health professionals on site. Don't expect to do it with one conversation, but you can do it with a bunch.
1, 2, 3. Okay. I'm keeping track here. Okay, so go
ahead. Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
We have a local health crisis with the fossil fuel emissions, and we also have Marathon trying to up the emissions. So the sulfur dioxide is proven with all the research. We have higher cancer here. I'd like to know what your take is on a teaching hospital within the university campus, because I'm new to this argument, but has it been brought up in conjunction? Because we had to bring Schulitz from London to get a satellite here to try and get doctors to settle. And maybe have we discussed this at all?
This is not an issue I can comment on. Sorry, don't know anything about it.
the scarf. And then you're, yep, you, yeah. He seems so surprised.
My name's Marina. Thank you for coming, Mr. Sewell. And thank you for hosting it. And again, I'd like to also thank Chris and Philippa and the camp group for being...
The camp group's pretty impressive, isn't it? Let's hear it for the camp group.
But one of the things that I belong to a group called Voices Against Poverty, and the camp group, actually, how we first heard of them was when they came to visit our Voices Against Poverty group, and you know, they really put it to us, you know, that this is definitely an issue of poverty, and it didn't take too long for us to. It didn't take too much to sell it to us that way either, you know. It definitely is an issue of poverty. And so our group is, we've been doing some things. We've been visible a little bit with this and kind of reposting some of the stuff on social media that the camp group is putting out. But we've decided we're going to come up with a plan for our group to get out there and do things on our own as well, and with a little bit of because one of the things that's happening in Windsor is that they're really good. The city council and the powers that be around here, the supposed leaders, are good at saying, "Oh, it's the naysayers," and you know, and they treat it like it's this little group of pesky. Don't want anything.
It's not that little, is it?
And, oh, I know that. I've been part of the naysayers for years. But you know, that's the appearance that they give the camp group and other groups. And myself, I think it's important for other groups of people to get up and say, you know what, Voices Against Poverty doesn't like that idea either. And individuals...
Can you speak to the poverty issue?
You know, certain individuals stand up and say, I can't say more than that. I don't like that idea. We need to start writing letters to
I think
our,
we treat this as a speech.
Letters to the editor and putting our own personal, you know, maybe even like Council of Canadians. And, you know, we have lots of different groups of people represented here in this room. Could be.
No. I totally agree. We all have to band together and get our groups vocal, and we will definitely continue working. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
I just wanted to ask, though, are there any other hashtags being used right now?
Oh, I don't know.
I used, today I used, we are not so ready, because they're using we are ready.
There is a lot of really good minds in the room. I'm not one of them. not when it comes to hashtags, no.
Did you have a question? We should stop soon.
Okay. Yeah, so we've got another 5 minutes.
Okay.
So hold on 1 second. Yeah. You're next. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to quickly mention that there have been a lot of questions about how John Sewell worked and accomplished as much as he did, and I wanted to just mention that he's written a book describing everything that he's talked about tonight, and it's a wonderful book, and it's called How We Changed Toronto.
Well, and I want to tell you, I agree, it's a wonderful book. And not only that, but I actually brought a bunch of copies. And if anybody wants to buy it at the end of the meeting, it goes for $30. I even got credit card thing. And I'll be over there at the table at the end of the meeting in case anybody wants.
Just last question.
You had mentioned about part of the policy of this hospital planning is to plan for 20 years, 50 years, 100
years.
Is that a newer policy or has that been around? Because I'm thinking that the fact that we just laid off a whole bunch of nurses. Like this gentleman said, we just spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the hospitals that we've got. The fact that it's going to take our downtown and spread it out even more than we already are, it just, none of it makes sense to me, because if we're looking at 100 years down the road, well, then shouldn't we be planning with what we've got and growing that, as
yes.
opposed to, like, throwing it all away, or is this 100-year plan reviewing
well,
This
idea of planning for 50 and 100 years and the idea of big sites, that's all part of Infrastructure Ontario, and that's a relatively new ministry. The idea of public-private partnerships is a new idea that has been developed by some of the largest companies in the world to try and make sure that they get to bid on projects around the world. So, you know, that in Toronto, as an example, they're building the Eglinton Subway. And in fact, it was not even a Canadian company that got the contract. I mean, it just goes on and on. So it's relatively new. It's about 10 years. But in fact, it's really gotten off the rails. And there's no question we should be worrying much more about the here and now. But it's true. You spend $2 billion on bricks and mortar. Sorry, we can't hire as many nurses as we'd like.
But in keeping with that 100-year yep. thought, I mean, we've got something that's already a number of decades, so let's project into our 100%
yep.
with what we've got.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, let's not start over. Let's start where we are. Yep, I agree.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, I know there's a lot more questions. I would like to go on forever. I would love to go on forever. But I want to first off thank everybody for showing up tonight, because that's the most important thing, is that you're here. And you got to hear Mayor Sewell speak about this. I'm thrilled to have him here. I have as well read the book, and I highly suggest that you pick one up. John, don't go too far, because it's customary that we present you with a little token of our appreciation for spending some time with us and enlightening us about a lot of the goals that and the job we have ahead of us.
Absolutely.
We went to Bibli Oasis and said, give us the biggest book on Windsor you have. So I think that's about 38 pounds. And it's a pictorial history from the vault of the Windsor Star.
That's where the mega hospital deserves to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And before we wrap up, and before I send everybody off to get their books and to get the signature, are you doing that tonight, John?
I've got books here.
Did you want to do that now? Okay, so
a few minutes. Yeah.
You'll sit down and do it for a bit. Okay, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to remind everybody that John is also with us for one more day. So if you have the opportunity tomorrow, Philippa, you wrote this out for me, but you don't have a location. Whereabouts? Okay, it's at the library. Sorry. Okay, so starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, we've got a film. This changes everything. I'm sure a lot of people in the room have seen it. It's a wonderful film. 11:30 lunch, noon, Mr. Sewell will be speaking again. And then we're lucky enough to, at 1:30, we have Tamara Stomp, who is a former Kingsville counselor. And I'm really sorry I'm not going to be there, because it's so important that we get both the city and the county aspects on this. So Tamara's here tonight. She will be there tomorrow. As well as is my brother from another mother still here? Did he leave? Okay, you'll see a guy who looks exactly the same as me, except he's got a little bit more tattoos and a little less hair, Steve Green. And he will be there tomorrow as well. He's the coordinator for the Windsor Essex Community Gardens, and I hope as many of you can come to that as humanly possible. But thank you so much. It's a good point. It's a good point. Philippa, can I call you up? And can you speak to that? I know we have some petitions up there, but as everybody in this room knows, I was the only councillor who voted against the hospital levy. So that means there's 9 other. Thank you. That means there's 9 other councillors around the table that needs to hear your thoughts. That means there's a mayor that needs to hear your thoughts. a lot of people think this is a done deal, and I don't believe it's a done deal, or I wouldn't be doing this, and I wouldn't still be standing up here with Philippa and with Shane and with the incredible camp group that's got so much energy. We don't think it's a done deal. And then even bigger than that, it's about our city. You know, we're never going to stop caring and fighting for our city. So we'll continue on this fight. Philippa, if you could maybe address this gentleman's question about next steps. The radio folk need to hear from
you. Yeah. The most direct thing we can do is talk about this. Okay. I need to grow. We need to be talking about this. How many of us are here in this room today? This is a fabulous turnout, but we're only a fraction of the whole county. So we need to get how many of 300,000 people. We need to be talking about this. And the way to do that is come to the meetings. Actually, the hospital's organizing a meeting on the weekend. We need to go there and ask questions. And we need to be putting, this is a very positive message. We're looking for the best healthcare for our region. We're not naysayers. We want something positive. So I think we should be asking constructive questions and be pushing the our leaders, whether they be the hospital management or our councillors or our MPs and our MPPs. Let's write letters and tell them what it is that we want. So we have a petition that's over there at the door. We're asking people to please sign the petition. It's a legislative petition. So that's a very immediate step that we can take. When we have 1,000 signatures, we're planning to take that petition to Queen's Park. We have about 500 signatures. And I don't know how many of you here in the room knew about this petition. So with relatively little effort, we were able to gather 500 signatures. The petition says there are too many questions here and things that don't really add up. We need to start again. And that doesn't mean that we need to go 2 years back. It means that we need to be honest about what it is that we want. And we can build on things that have been said in the last 2 years. But I think that it's important to go back to the beginning and start saying what is it that we really want. There was a question earlier about the fulsome, what was it about the fulsome process and the openness and the transparency, and a lot of us are not feeling that transparency. So that, but I felt it tonight. Did you all feel that tonight? And then the other thing is to write letters. And on our website, so it's windsormegahospital.ca, there is a page that says take action. So we've made it really easy to find the contacts for all the people that we can write to. And it's quite easy to, you know, you write one email to one person and then the next email, you know, you just change the address, but you can, and it's not very difficult to send emails to 10 different people. But if all of us in the room were to write emails to the people in charge saying this is important to us, you need to listen to our concerns, then I think that they will listen, and we will get more credibility, and we won't be naysayers. We won't be a handful of naysayers anymore. We'll be a large group of people who are thinking positively and constructively about healthcare for our future. So how many, yeah, for an accountable mega hospital planning process. Yeah, so I don't know if everybody here is on Facebook. I know not everybody.
I don't think that's the exact name of the Facebook group, and we weren't able to change it, but you'll be able to find it if you put that in.
It's really easy. You go to our website, and the link is right there. So it's windsormegahospital.ca.
And this statement is actually for all the listeners at home, because you forgot we're live on 99.1 CGM, right? So I wanted to thank all the listeners at home for tuning in, for those of you who cannot be here tonight. And everything Philippa said, I highly urge you to do from the comfort of your home. So we're going to send it back to the studio, and thank you. Thank you all for showing up tonight.